Hi, I'm Chris Wigley, CEO of Genomics England. I've spent my career at the intersection of technology, ethics, and human stories. Now, I lead the amazing team here at Genomics England. We're trying to bring the benefits of genomic medicine to everyone, and that involves accelerating genomic research and also working with the NHS to bring genomics into the heart of healthcare. Genomics is a word that can trigger really strong responses, hope, fear, anger, and there's a lot of information out there, but it's not all accessible to non-experts. And there are some myths out there. So we want to talk more about this word, the G word, genomics. That's what this podcast is about. Welcome to the G word.
So Matt Hancock, thanks so much for making the time in what has been a crazy year and a crazy few days. I'd like to start with just technology per se, and then we're going to get into genomics and some of the questions that that raises. There is an argument that in a world where we need more nurses and more beds, why should we be worried about cutting edge technology, you know, at the far end of which are things like genomics and quantum computing and so on? What would you say to people who raise that as a concern?
Well, obviously, I hear this concern all the time as health secretary, and I think there's two responses to it. One, immediate, approximate, and one strategic. The immediate is that you can help everybody who works in healthcare by giving them access to better technology immediately to hand. You know, some of the really basic things that NHSX is doing, for instance, having a single unified login instead of having to log in a dozen times to a dozen different systems within one hospital. Really basic housekeeping that, because of the history of the use of data in the NHS, has been done really poorly for too long and needs sorting. And that is being sorted. And I'm really proud of how NHSX is driving that agenda across the NHS. And there's some amazing leaders inside the NHS who are really picking up this ball and running with it. And my job is to give them the air cover, obviously the financial support and the backing to get this done. So that's sorting out the basics and the housekeeping. But there's also a strategic argument, right? Which is that throughout history, the advance in the condition of mankind has been led by improvements in technology. And I know that sounds rather grand, but it's true. And improvements in healthcare have been driven by improvements in technology, improvements in all kinds of living conditions. So everything from the technology that allows us to get clean, safe water to everyone in the UK all of the time, that has probably saved more lives than anything else. Technologies like vaccinations, you know, very much on the cards right now.
Turns out they're pretty handy.
We reckon the experts reckon that they've saved more lives than anything else other than clean water. And then you can go all the way through healthcare, and you find new technologies that have over the centuries improved our lives. But it's not just healthcare; it's right across every part of life. Modern life has been invented, and therefore the backing of science and its practical application, which is essentially what I think of as technology, is critical if you want to improve people's lives. And if you go into politics, you do so to improve people's lives. I mean, that's what the vast majority of people do. And what's the point of being a government minister unless you're going to use that platform and the levers that you have because of it to improve people's lives? And so the aim is to do that in the short term with these this better housekeeping and more confidence about technology in the NHS and giving people the backing to use data in a modern way instead of sort of being worried about it and running away from it. And then make sure that strategically we're doing everything we can to invent the things that are going to make lives better, save lives in the future.
Fantastic. And I want to come back to data and how we use it in a second, but just thinking about genomics in the context of this year, they've obviously been at the heart of the UK's response, both in terms of sequencing the virus itself. And as we're speaking today, we've just had news about a new strain that's emerged through that sort of machinery at very high speed. We at Genomics England have been sequencing humans. We're then trying to understand what we can learn from comparing the virus of the genome of the virus and the genome of the human. And we seem to have been able to do this at faster speed and at greater scale than most other countries around the world. Without turning this into a pure advert for UK PLC, why can we do that in a way that other countries haven't been able to move so fast or at such scale?
Well, it's true that we deposit more sequenced genomes of the virus into the international databases than any other country, by some margin. And obviously our human genomic research effort is more advanced than any other country in the world. I think partly this is down to the excellent base of high quality research science that we have. It is also advanced and helped by the NHS, meaning we have a universal service with access to patients right across the country in a universal way rather than split by how people pay for it. And then the third thing I put it down to is leadership. You know, David Cameron's leadership, which put us at the front of the queue for genomic capabilities by establishing Genomics England and all that Genomics England does, you know, that's personal political leadership that drove our capabilities in the first half of the last decade. And then building on that, you know, the health research team and the budgets that come with it, which are important, and the amazing capability that we've built up, not just at the Sanger Institute and within GEL, but right across the British academic system. You know, it's a combination of things, but really it comes down to having that bedrock of high quality science and then having people willing to really, you know, back this science and stick their neck out. A shout out to Public Health England, right? Their genomic work on the virus has been incredibly advanced, right from sequencing right at the start through to the work that they do now that helps us as, you know, people like me as policymakers having to make the big calls, helps us to understand what's going on at a far, far more detailed and sophisticated level than would be possible without this advice that we're given based on this science.
And you touched earlier on data and how we use data and being braver there. This has been a year in which the COVID regulations have rightly allowed different organizations to move fast in an appropriate way to respond to the virus. How do you think we can lead a conversation about how we use data, what consent means and so on, in a way that protects people's rights and privacy and also allows us to actually create the benefit of these technologies, genomics and others, to improve people's lives?
Well, genomics, if you think about it, is just another data gathering exercise, in the same way that, you know, testing is just a diagnostic exercise, which is just a data gathering exercise, you know, at its root. Taking a COVID test is a binary piece of data. Do you have COVID or not? I mean, you can actually get far more sophisticated results through as the genomic analysis of the positive samples demonstrates. But at its crudest, it's simply a 1-0. That's what comes back. And so the use of data and thinking about how data is structured and used is critical to optimizing all of these technologies, and we just need to be far more confident in its high quality use. And high quality, of course, means making sure it's used appropriately and right by the right people who have the right levels of access. But structured right, that isn't a barrier. That is one of the you get high quality confidence as well as high quality insights out of a well-structured data program, and we shouldn't see all these things as a as a trade-off. So I think giving people the confidence to and the capabilities to use data to find insights that can then improve lives is absolutely central to what we need to do over the years to come.
How do we bring people with us on that journey? So, for example, on Friday we had a paper come out in Nature about identifying genes that help us understand the severity of COVID. Basically, great news. There was lots of coverage about it in the press. And over the weekend, I made that foolish mistake of reading all of the comments under the articles and the on the online versions of newspapers, and was amazed once again at the level of sort of vitriol, concern and anger in response to what I had seen as amazing news around, oh, this is about eugenics and this is about the man is trying to kind of control us.
The key thing that you said is the word mistake. The thing is, the vast majority of people are with us, and it's really important to aim off the very small but shrill voices who complain about this. And I think that's partly been the mistake of in the past in terms of the use of data in healthcare. This isn't just in the UK; it's worldwide. And you know, talking to health ministers across the world, the challenge is there. A very small number of ill-informed people having a go at the high quality use of data to improve lives, they shouldn't be heeded where they don't have a point. We should just, I wish we could get through interviews and discussions like this without even talking about it, right? Don't read the comments, look at the science, right? Look at what's going to improve people's lives. And anyway, these people have lost the argument comprehensively over this pandemic, because rightly, people are demanding the best use of everything that we have available to us as a society to tackle the pandemic. And that, of course, means high quality data. So the changes to improve the way that the rules work around this are here to stay. In fact, we're going to go further. And give people more permission. For instance, you know, saying that you could use whatever device or application you want in order to transfer data, so long as it's done securely, is a was an obvious change to make. It's been so widely welcomed that you can, you know, WhatsApp something in the health space. What matters is the fundamentals of, are we using the information at our disposal to improve people's lives whilst also ensuring that the right people have access to the right information? That's what matters. All the rest of it just needs needs ignoring. And, you know, shrill naysayers are never going to be part of the future. And what matters is what is scientifically valid, not who shouts loudest.
Well, you mentioned leadership, and it's great to hear that. I might just dangle newspaper commentary in front of you anytime I need a rag to a bull. This is great.
Yeah, and look, I get my fair share of flack. I don't know whether you've noticed from time to time, but what matters is how are you improving people's lives. And sure, we all make mistakes, and you've got to learn from them, and you've got to drive forward. And I think people appreciate that.
Yeah, completely. So for the majority of people who are with us and who want to come on this journey, how can we help them to get smarter on these topics that can be quite complex, like genomics? You know, where we're trying to explain the probability of what these things mean and so on. Should we start bringing this into primary schools and secondary schools, or how do we bring people on the journey with us?
I definitely think that we should do all we can to use the fact that, you know, the pandemic, which has been awful in so many ways, has some upsides. Firstly, it's definitely sharpened the nation's interest in epidemiology and biology and healthcare. And I was standing just yesterday evening next to Chris Whitty as he gave what he openly described as a GCSE biology lesson to the nation, in terms of the new variant and how mutations occur in viruses. And I was standing there listening to him. Of course, I've had the benefit as health secretary of listening to the professor a lot. And I just thought how superbly he put it and how many people will be interested in, you know, learning about the biology of this, because it is really interesting. And as well as obviously important. So yes, we should do more on the education front, but we shouldn't rely just on that. We also have a duty to communicate in a way that is objective, straight, totally reasonable, and at all different levels of prior knowledge. So, you know, we must put out scientific papers. We must put out the deep explanations to the interested lay reader, and we must make sure we communicate in a way that people with only a passing interest can pick up, which is really about focusing on the consequences, the benefits for people. And if you, I think of it in three layers, basically. It's okay, so what is the so what for somebody who doesn't know or care about the mechanisms but wants to know how will this change my life? How does it have the potential to change my life? Then there's the, you know, the basically the interested lay reader. It's like the long read. Actually, the BBC is absolutely brilliant at this, and the BBC's interpretation and description of the Nature article, I think, was absolutely superb and a great exercise in public communications, and really living up to their remit to explain and to educate. And then, of course, the deep science, which has got to underpin it all. I think if we think about public communications at those three levels, then we can really help. And you've also, you know, at each of those levels, you've got to make sure that you're communicating in a way that can't lead to the to misinterpretation as well, which is a very important part of public communications too.
Fantastic. Final question. We've got all these technologies coming on stream around early detection of cancer from the blood, genomics, high definition imagery, bringing all of these different data sets together. Where do you think we could be in 5 to 10 years in the mainstream of healthcare?
It's such an exciting time. These technologies need to be driven into the core of the NHS, and they are being taken up right at the core of the NHS. We could be in a world where we have more and far better diagnostics and therefore better treatment of people for diseases like cancer, crucially in a way that empowers clinicians to do the bit that only the human brain can do, the creativity and the compassion. And it's about using technology to empower the people in the system to do what they do even better. It is about the creation of tools for people to use in improving lives. So, you know, giving an oncologist a piece of technology to be able to draw the first draft of where some cancer surgery needs to go, so that they can then edit that draft according to their expert view, can reduce by to a tenth the amount of time needed to prepare for cancer surgery. You know, so that's in the AI space rather than in the genomic space, but a radical improvement that will both improve cancer outcomes but also save huge amounts of time for highly precious oncologists. I mean precious in the best sense. precious as in, you know, their time is precious because they are hugely trained and valuable. That's better for everybody. So that's one example. I think that, you know, if the cancer detection work comes off, obviously, you know, that's one of the most harrowing diseases that there is. And we can make very significant strides forward and save lives. And I think we're at the cusp of a major breakthrough in a whole class of technologies that can really improve lives.
And we talked earlier about how well set up the UK is to do this, right? And there is something magical about having an integrated healthcare system free at the point of care, where we can actually deploy these technologies in the background and, as you say, bring them into the mainstream. Exciting times indeed. Matt, I should let you strap on your shield, armor, and shining sword and go back to battle with our pandemic. Thank you so much for taking the time this morning.
Well, thank you to you and to all your team who do an absolutely amazing job. We've just got to get there together.
Well, that's all for this episode. Thanks for listening to this discussion about the G word and for joining us on this journey to highlight and debate the implications of genomics as it comes to the mainstream of healthcare and society. Remember to subscribe to the G word on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. If you have views on these topics, if you have a suggestion for someone we should interview, then do write to us at podcast@genomicsengland.co.uk. And do remember, if you've enjoyed listening, that giving us a 5-star review really helps other people find out about the series. I'd appreciate it very much. See you on the next episode of The G Word.